everyone has a story to tell. And we get so caught up in our ego and what people will think and how we'll be judged in what, oh, well, what if I put it out there and they don't like it? What if you put it out there and it saves someone's life? What if you put it out there and it helps somebody pick themselves up after the worst experience they've ever faced? What if your vulnerability and authenticity and telling your story frees somebody from pain?
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 86, with founder of Overcoming Graduation, Brian Drury.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Angles of Latitude podcast. Thank you for joining me this awesome, fantastic day. I'm your host, JC Preston, and in this session, I'm with the fitness astronaut, Layla Ramadian. We're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people to create their own personal freedom. And in this podcast, released each Thursday, we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. This session is powered by Fizzle.co, and you know, it's amazing when you can live life on your own terms. You know, I believe having your own business is pretty much the biggest way to do that, the most realistic way to do that. It's really the only thing that I believe will give you your own freedom. But the path to that freedom is extremely challenging, and you definitely have to work for it. It's amazing and possible to do it, and I have so many examples of folks doing it on this show. And then as you look around the web, there's plenty of other folks out there doing it as well. But it's challenging. Don't get me wrong. It's very challenging, and many people give up way before they ever really get started because they don't have the support that they need. And that's why I do the show, to give you guys encouragement, tips, and tactics to build your own independent business. However, if you want to go deeper and be part of a membership community that won't let you quit, you should definitely look at Fizzle. It comes with both training courses on just about everything. They're adding more to it all the time. And in the meantime, as you're progressing through those courses, they have a searchable form that is simply amazing. Ask a question on logo design, they'll help you with that. Shooting videos, they'll help you there too. On top of that, they have a weekly group calls with the staff to help you get unstuck with whatever issue might be having. Try it out today for 5 weeks free by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/fizzle. Okay, now, today's guest is a really cool guy, someone that I've been wanting to have on the show for a while, and finally got him on, and like me, he found himself in a position after graduation where he found himself asking, is this it? Is this all there is? And luckily for me, I had those questions during a few internships during the end of my undergrad. And luckily, I was still in Indiana, so it wasn't that big of a lifestyle change. For Brian Drury, on the other hand, he picked up and moved to a little old town by the name of Appleton, Wisconsin, for his first job out of school. And it wasn't too long before he was asking himself the same types of questions. So what did he do? Well, that's what you guys are going to find out in today's chat. But let's just say that, like my past two guests, he finds himself traveling around the world and meeting all kinds of people. And in this conversation, we discuss the path in writing his first book, some insight in how it became a bestseller on Amazon, and what prompted him to find out what he really wanted from life. This session is jam-packed with great insight, so make sure you're listening all the way through intentionally. And be sure to check out the show notes at newinceptions.com/86. And of course, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here with my co-host, Layla. How are you doing today, Layla?
I'm doing great. Thank you, JC. I'm having a wonderful day.
I've been waking up at 5 a.m. every day and I'm getting so much done. Like,
How's that working? You're actually achieving that challenge then, huh?
Yes, yes. Basically what I'm doing is I get my phone, I put it downstairs and I have a spiral staircase. So when I wake up, I wake up really quickly when I'm walking down that spiral staircase. So I wake up at 5, almost trip, and then I go to, and then I start the day.
Otherwise, you're going to stumble down that sucker.
I already have a couple of bruises. Dump.
That would be bad. Wow. Yeah. That's cool. But good for you for being able to do that, because I knew that for a lot of people that the 4:30/5 a.m. challenge is definitely a thing that's been helping out a lot of people. So good job.
Yeah, it feels like you're racing the sun. That's how I see it.
Gotcha. But today's guest is someone that I'm definitely proud to have on. And you know, he's all about helping folks with their why, which, you know, I'm all about. And he has been featured on numerous podcasts, including a friend of ours, Zeph Blacksburg's Defunct. So I'm sorry to see that he, you know, ended it not too long ago, Year of Purpose podcast. And but Brian Drury is a founder of Overcoming Graduation, a website dedicated in helping people get over the initial shock and uncertainty of the, quotes, real world. And besides that, he has a day job that he absolutely loves, kicking it back and traveling around the world, and continues to build his business through coaching, podcasting, and all kinds of other opportunities. So without further delay, how are you doing today, Brian?
Dude, I'm having a fantastic day. A lot of great things have happened and I was looking forward to this interview. So I'm excited to be talking to you both.
Awesome. Well, again, pleasure having you here. And a lot of stuff to get through. So Layla, kick it off.
Okay. Well, Brian, welcome to the show. I am really stoked to, I'm really stoked to have you on the show, because I learned that you are very much into travel and speaking languages. And that's obviously a very, very big part of my DNA. So I kind of like to start from the beginning and your childhood, because I think our audience is really curious to know how you got from where you were to where you are now. So kind of tell us a little about yourself growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. I can dive in there. So I grew up in New Jersey, and contrary to popular belief, we do not all talk like the people on the Jersey Shore.
Right. Yes.
And every time someone hears that I'm from Jersey, they say, "Oh, Joysy." And I'm like, "Yeah, we don't do that." So grew up in Jersey. I mean, I was always a super high energy kid, constantly doing tons of different things. As a kid, it was sports. And this may not come as much of a shock in the conversations we've already had, but I've always been a talker, and shocker that I started my own podcast. So when I was young, it was always about getting out, exploring. There was constant movement, and I really thrived on connecting with people. And so I went on to go to school at Penn State, studied supply chain there and minored in Spanish. And one of the biggest changes in my life, one of the biggest, most pivotal moments was my study abroad in Granada, Spain, in the south of Spain.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. I love it so much.
I've got to check out Spain sometime. I've been wanting to go. I've been to other parts of Europe, but not Spain. Not yet.
It is Spain, Brazil, and Ireland are my three favorite places in the world. So after the show, we'll talk. I've been all over Spain, but the people there really are just unbelievably some of the best people you'll ever meet. But what that study abroad did for me was, you know, I'd been studying Spanish in school for years and years. I got so bored going over the same conjugations over and over, and just felt like I kind of wanted to give up. I got to junior year of college, and that's when my study abroad came. And that was the moment it clicked why language is so valuable. Because for the first time in my life, I was able to be in a different place. I was able to immerse myself into a different culture. But one of my favorite things is hearing someone tell a story in their own language and express their fullest. Because when someone tells a story in their native language versus their second or third, it is a totally different experience. And I've heard tons of things that talk about how your language almost influences your personality, and that in many ways we almost embody different personalities or think differently when we're operating in a different language. So that's why that's been such a big passion point for me, in terms of this was my first experience. I got to travel around Europe a bit. I said, I need to make this a part of my life. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet, but it has to happen. And I also said, I'm going to not only keep learning languages, but if I can help other people do it too, it is one of the most important things I think people can spend their time learning.
Wait a minute. So I have a question. So when, so basically growing up until college, you had never left the United States?
No, I went on a cruise with a buddy's family one time, but to me, a cruise isn't really travel. It doesn't count. So no, I had never traveled to a country outside the U.S., even though my parents actually met in France. So my first real outside the U.S. trip came when I studied abroad in Spain.
So let me ask you something real quick about, okay, so if your first time was in college, what prompted you to actually spend that time traveling abroad? Because for me, it always struck me as something of interest, but going through engineering, I was just like, you know, I'm already going to be spending enough time through college as it is. I can do that afterwards. Mm-hmm. What prompted you to do it during your time in school?
And honestly, I think that's one of the biggest travesties of the way our education system is set up now, because I had friends in engineering and medical degrees that didn't have any flexible time. They didn't have a moment off where they could go and explore, try something different. They needed to be so heads down because those majors are so intense that you have every course planned out for your whole college career. Being a business major, I had much more flexibility. And the reason that I wanted to travel, so my parents met in France. My mom was actually, so she's a Canadian citizen, but she was born in Sri Lanka back when it was still called Ceylon. She spent 2 years of high school in Canada and then 2 in Nairobi, Kenya. She spent 2 years of college in Canada and then 2 in Grenoble, France, where she met my dad. And then she traveled all over the world because her dad worked for the World Bank. But my dad graduated school, saved up his money, said he wanted to go to France. And he actually backpacked around Europe and paid his way through being a street musician and met my mom at one of the shows that he played. So my whole life growing up, I heard these stories of travel. I was so curious about the world outside. I've always loved Latin girls. That was another pull. And so with all of these different factors coming in, I was enamored by the world outside what I knew. And we had done some traveling in the US, but I was like, I had this deep, deep desire to get out and travel. And that was the first opportunity I really had to get so out of my comfort zone.
Well, that's really good that you mentioned that, because I studied abroad twice at Purdue. And the reason why I did that is because Purdue saw that error with travel for engineering. So they made engineering travel They made engineering study abroad programs. So I went to Greece and I went to Turkey, and they counted as engineering credit. However, that's not very common in a lot of universities where studying abroad for a technical major is a possibility. So I'm really, really glad that you recognize that, and I hope that our education system will eventually pick that up in other institutions, because it really opens you up when you're traveling by yourself without the influence of your parents or a tourist trap like a cruise to do it, because literally the bug hits and the high comes and you just get so sucked into traveling, and it's amazing. So that's awesome. So continue forward. Like, so you studied abroad, you went to Spain. Did you hit any type of quarter life crisis, they say, or situations? Like, so you had this high of, yay, I'm traveling. And now what happens after that?
Almost as if you're setting me up for something. This is perfect. So yes, there was a moment that really hit, or several moments that really triggered me to get on the path that I am on now. And so I finished my travel. I came back and finished my senior year of school at Penn State. And really, it was an interesting thing because I had all these deep questions. I felt like I was kind of outgrowing school, that I knew about this bigger, greater world out there, and I wanted to explore. I wanted to know what my purpose was, what impact I was meant to have. But the interesting thing that happened was every time I really wanted to dive into that question, I would end up just going out and drinking with my buddies. So one of those very interesting distractions or moments where we numb or push ourselves away from the difficult questions because they feel too hard or too big to face. And I got out of school. I got my first job out in Appleton, Wisconsin. And if you don't know Appleton, Wisconsin, I wouldn't be surprised because it is a very, very small town. And
oh my gosh.
Initially getting out there, it was okay. I'm a big city guy. I prefer warm weather, but I was going to be working in international export. So I was going to be able to use my Spanish. I was going to get real world experience. And I graduated school with $80,000 in student loan debt. And I promised my parents that if I went to Penn State, I would take care of that, that I would be responsible. So I said, there's got to be a way for me to do that and do all these other things that I want to do. So I started the job. I was learning things. I was being challenged. It was new, but very, very quickly, the monotony set in. And many of the things that they don't tell you about in school, like how difficult it is to make new friends in a new place, all of the challenges that you're going to face from an emotional, mental, and physical standpoint once you get out into this quote-unquote real world. And I hit this point where I hit a real low. And when you have a 9-month winter and temperatures as cold as minus 53, that was the coldest day I felt when I was there.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Snow every 3 days. Wow. The sun might peak out one day a week. And when you're in that environment, depression can be a little bit easier to get to.
See, Layla, aren't you glad you're in Indiana with our crappy ice storms all year?
It sounds like, all winter long. I was very red. How do you say, against coming to the Midwest, but come hearing about Wisconsin and Minnesota, I mean, we're only 6 hours away from y'all, and that's a huge difference. That's crazy.
Yeah, now that I live in North Carolina, people freak out when it gets below 50, and I'm like, guys, it is so nice. You have no idea. It can be so much worse, but
yes.
We literally did the throw a boiling pot of water in the air and it turned to snow immediately. So
wow.
I have the video if you want.
Yes.
But so I reached this point and I reached this low. And I have this question just running through my head that I think most young adults these days feel is this all there is? Is this really all that my life is going to be? Is going in, clocking in. And although I worked in international export and I was working with people all over the world, which that aspect I loved, and it sounds like a very sexy job. I was sitting at a desk doing 50 to 100 emails a day, processing orders in SAP, and it was just so monotonous. Like once I got good at the job, I was very good at it, but I didn't have to take any effort. I wasn't growing. And days and weeks and months were passing by. There were times, I swear to God, it felt like I came in, sat down on Monday and started typing, and then I blinked and it was Friday at 5 o'clock and I was going home. I saw the people around me, most of them would just go to work, complain about work, drink their faces off on the weekend, and then repeat. Oh. And for me, I was like, there's got to be more than this. There has got to be something greater than what I'm doing right now. And it all changed. The big pivotal moment was a day where my brother sent me a YouTube video. And I remember it was a particularly bad day, gray, cold. I felt very lonely. I was uncertain. My brother said, you got to watch this. And are you either of you familiar with Sean Stevenson?
No.
So Sean, he is now a very good friend. But back then, I just saw this video called Sean Stevenson's Dance Party. And you see this little guy in a wheelchair dancing to Kesha. And it immediately turned my day around. He was smiling. He was saying, we're all too serious. We need to enjoy life. Come to find out he has a serious bone condition as a child, but now is one of the most renowned speakers in the world. He shared the stage with Richard Branson, with the Dalai Lama. And I was like,
wow.
I was like, he's happy. And look at all the challenges he's faced. I'm like, I got to learn more. So I started to watch his speeches. And then I started to watch other speeches. Then I started to get books. And then I started to see that there were people who saw the world differently, people who were teaching this, and that there was a way to live differently, but I had to take action. Because if I ever wanted to be someone that could help other people make changes in their life, I had to do it first. Mm-hmm. Because for me, the integrity is one of the most important components, because it would be like me sitting on the gym or sitting on the couch covered in Cheetos and pointing at my friend and going, hey, dude, you really need to get to the gym. Like, I couldn't do that. So I started diving into personal development. I started saying no. And this is a really interesting thing. I started saying no to the things that didn't serve me and the things that didn't align with the vision that I was creating for who I wanted to become. And being a people pleaser and being desperate for connection, that was really hard at times. But one of the most important things I said yes to was running with My Team Triumph. So My Team Triumph is a group that helps individuals with disabilities participate in endurance events. So if you're familiar with Dick and Rick Hoyt, push people with, I got to meet Dick Hoyt through this program. One of the most unbelievable people I've ever met. The guy's unbelievable. And the two of them started this movement where he had a kid's running stroller and pushed his son with cerebral palsy through races. And then it evolved over the years and they've run all over the world. He's run thousands and thousands of miles and swam. This inspired My Team Triumph. So the group helps anyone who needs help running make that dream come true. So mental, physical disabilities, people battling terminal illnesses, war veterans. I got to run 9 events with them in my 2 years living in Wisconsin. And it was one of the greatest, greatest things in my life because it combined two of my favorite things, which is physical fitness and helping people. And I also started to make real deep connections there. And through this personal development work and running with My Team Triumph, I got the inspiration to write my first book. And that was the real impetus and where the story came from. So would you like me to dive into that next?
Yeah, I definitely want to learn more about this book. Tell me more about it, because I've been really curious about how people get this idea of writing a book.
So what I've found, because I've helped to coach several people on finding their story, on what the process is, on how to actually get their book out there, and oftentimes the people that want to write books have had this desire for a long time, but the things that are holding them back are stories and excuses in their head, like, well, I'm too young to write a book. People only write books when they're older. Who would care about my story? But like we were talking about in pre-show, one of the most important things to realize is that everyone's story is unique. Everyone's perspective and experience is unique, and therefore everyone has a unique story to tell.
Here's a case in point real quick. Sorry.
But yeah. Jump in, man.
Are you familiar with Caleb Maddox?
I am not.
Okay. Kid's 14 years old and he wrote a book on how to become successful as a kid.
And, that's amazing.
And if you're telling me, if you ever give him any excuse to that you're too young, then I'm always going to point out him, because I mean, his dad is just, you know, his dad's a business coach himself. At least I think he is. But I know that Caleb is a motivational speaker now at, again, 14, 15 years old, and he has millions of followers already. And it's like, there you go. Right. And so it's just like, if I ever hear anybody say that, it's like, look at this, or look at this, if they're 20 or 30, 40, whatever. Yeah. There's always going to be an example. So, anyway, go on.
And actually, to build really on your example, if you want to really just kick your excuses right in the butt. So Dick and Rick Hoyt, Rick Hoyt is the son who has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. He's able to type using a computer that was specially formatted because he can control the motion of his head. He's written several best-selling books, and he has no function or very limited usage of his appendages below his neck. Mm. So a 14-year-old who's written books. You have Rick Hoyt, who's writing books. Matty Stefanik was a guy who was really popular on Oprah back in the 90s, I believe. And he was this young boy with an extremely serious medical condition, and he wrote love poems and poems about humanity and was this amazing old soul in the young body. So everyone has a story to tell, and we get so caught up in our ego, in what people will think and how we'll be judged, in what if I put it out there and they don't like it? What if you put it out there and it saves someone's life? Mm-hmm. What if you put it out there and it helps somebody pick themselves up after the worst experience they've ever faced? What if your vulnerability and authenticity and telling your story free somebody from pain? Because honestly, guys, that's one of the biggest things that I believe we're here to do, is connect, is to build relationships and to share this human experience, but as much as possible, save people from mental, emotional, physical suffering, because we go through pain so that we can use it. And that I believe very deeply. So when it came to writing a book, I realized after watching all this personal development stuff, I was like, what's stopping me from writing this? And then all the excuses popped up, right? The imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. It was, well, who are you to write a book? And no one will read it. And you don't know how to publish it. And how would you even get an editor? And yeah, you know what? You shouldn't even try. And I was like, yeah, okay, you're right.
Or your writing is not good, or you're not a good writer.
Right. Yeah. You're not a good writer. You don't have the time. Oh, I love what, oh, there's no time to do it. And all this nonsense comes up, but we believe it for some reason because we're conditioned to. And then 2 weeks later, the same voice pops up. And the same excuses started to play, but this other voice finally came up in this positive, this empowered voice. And it said, no, what's stopping you from writing it? Not publishing, not editing. What's stopping you from grabbing your computer and writing that book right now? And for the first time, I didn't have any excuses to fall back on, because so much of this development material talked about owning your destiny, owning your journey, and making things happen. So I said nothing. And I got this really exciting, like intuitive feeling that just popped, like came up in my chest. And I tell people all the time, and you think like, and then he picked up the computer and wrote. No, it still took me another 2 weeks because of procrastination. Finally, one night I picked up my computer because I'd been writing it every day in my head. I had the first line, I had the character names, I had the flow of the story, but I hadn't put pen to paper once. And so finally one night, again, I was having the excuses. I said, I'm too tired. I want to be in a positive state when I write, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know what? Write your first line, because every good, big, amazing thing that happens in your life starts with one moment of courage. It starts with one act. It starts with, I just heard in a podcast the other day, a woman talked about, you have 5 seconds to make that decision. Some people it might even be shorter, but are you either going to act differently, or are you just going to fall into the habits? So for the first time, I acted differently, wrote the first mm-hmm. line, and then I committed to write at least one word every day, which might sound ridiculous, but I found oftentimes the hardest part is just getting started. And once you get yes. going, doing the things that you love, it is incredible the momentum that you can get. And when you create consistency, even if it's 5 minutes a day or one line per day, it is unbelievable what you can do in a month, a year, 2 years. So that's how the whole process started. That's where I got into writing the book. And I did not stick to writing every single day. For the first month or two, I was very good, but it was on and off for a while. And during this time, writing the book, I faced one of the biggest challenges in my life. And I thought the big challenges that were coming would be how to find an editor, how I would publish, did I want to go the yeah. traditional publishing route or not? So what I realized was that each step along the way, you figure it out. So I wrote my first draft, and it was this incredible feeling. I was like, I wrote my first draft of my book. It's something I've always dreamed of. And then I said, okay, well, I've got to find an editor. So I just reached out my network. I knew one of my friend's moms had written a book. Talked to her. She was way out of my price range and also did not do my genre. So she recommended me to a friend, and that friend said, Brian, you know what? She said, here's the price I'm offering. And it was way, way less than she should have charged. She was an excellent editor, very professional. She'd done traditional publishing. She'd done her self-publishing. And I said, listen, I'm like, I know you should be charging me a lot more, and I appreciate what you're doing. She goes, Brian, a lot of people helped me along the way. A lot of people gave me free advice, free time to help me make my dreams come true. So this is me paying it forward. And all I ask in doing this is that you do the same. And so I've done that every opportunity I've gotten since then. And going
through this, sweet.
Well, it's to me, I've heard many times you get back what you give out. And also give without the expectation of return. Because when I'm giving fully and I'm giving authentically, life is so much more rich and fun. And things do come back, but when you don't expect it, you just have so much better relationships. You have a better time. Life becomes so much brighter. And during this time, so I'm writing my book. I'm running with My Team Triumph. I'm in the best shape of my life. I was never a distance runner before. Things are clicking. I'm stepping outside. I'm seeing the world like I never have before. The sky is brighter. I'm seeing the beauty in this small town. I'm seeing the opportunity. And I knew I wasn't going to stay, but I was no longer just, woe is me. I was like, what can I do to make it change? I started taking different action to find a dream job that I could work in that would allow me to work and pay off my loans and travel while still building this company. And then mm-hmm. one day I get a phone call, and it's from my dad. And he said, hey, Brian, mom hasn't been feeling so good. And I said, okay, what's going on? He goes, she's got some bad stomach pain. We want to take her to the hospital. And I said, okay, you know, let me know as soon as we know something. A few days later, she had some tests done. We were waiting for the results. And I was sitting alone on my couch in Wisconsin. My roommate and his girlfriend were out. And I get a call from mom. And I was like, oh, geez, you know, we were thinking it was pancreatitis. So, you know, it'd be a few days in the hospital and she'd be out. So I was like, oh, okay, she's calling. Let's see what it is. Hey, mom, how are you? And she goes, I'll never forget. I will never forget this moment. She said, hey, Brian, we have more information. And I just paused. I waited. And she said, it's cancer. And when I tell you that in that moment, my body, my mind did not know how to convey how scared and sad and terrified and uncertain I was. And I cried in a way I never have before. I lost control of my body. I was shaking. And my mom, who was one of the sweetest, most beautiful people in the world, she cared about other people so much more than herself. So even in that moment, she just discovered she had pancreatic cancer, one of the most aggressive forms of cancer. She was trying to comfort and care for me. And she said, Brian, it's okay. We caught it early. We're going to work on this. She was always optimistic. She never wanted anyone else to carry her pain. In fact, even to her own detriment, I believe at times, she carried her pain with strength, with resolve, with silence. And there's a big conversation now about masculinity and femininity. And one of the things I hate to see the most is when a feminine person, man or woman, feels that femininity is weak. And so they try to embody masculinity when that's not at their core. That's not who they are. I think as people, we shift between the two. But when somebody loses sight of their core, like I see it all the time in the corporate world, a truly feminine woman who feels she needs to be masculine in order to be taken seriously, there is strength and power in both masculinity and femininity. I don't think any of us should be embarrassed to be who we are. I think we should learn about our different sides and create range within that. But my mom was one of the strongest, most feminine people I've ever known. And she was never loud, angry. She never snapped at people. She was always open. She always celebrated the small things. And she always found a way to find joy in the simplest things in life. And those are some of the biggest lessons I've learned. But throughout this process, I was writing the book, I was editing it. I went through some of the biggest ups and downs in my life. I learned some of the most important lessons that I work to share as much as possible. And in those 9 months from diagnosis to the day when my mom ultimately passed away, there were so many lessons that came. And it was one of my first, it is my biggest example in life of you never know what's coming your way. My mom was healthy. She exercised. She ate kale before people knew what kale was, and we hated it as kids, but she gave us healthy habits. She taught us so much. And my mom's resolve and strength through all that was and is one of the most important things I've ever experienced. And we promised her on her deathbed that we would use what we learned and we would use the pain that we experienced to help people. That we weren't going to let this make us hate life, that we weren't going to let this make us stop living, that we were going to use everything we learned to touch as many lives as we can. And as much as I would give anything to have my mom back, that has been one of the most powerful ways for me to connect with people, because my level of empathy and understanding for loss, for this type of pain, is so much deeper than it ever was prior to that.
Yeah. Wow. I suddenly lost my mom when I was fresh out of college myself. And a lot of the emotions, I mean, kind of took me back then too. And it's been six years at this point, 7 years, going on 7 years. And it doesn't get easier, but it kind of in the same way that you were able to use it as fuel to help other people. Mm-hmm. I've tried to do the same thing myself. So good job. Kudos to you.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And I know we were talking
about your loss.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, since we were talking about the book, the reason I tell that story is because it is integral. Because I had started my first blog when I got into personal development. It was called Finding Your Silver Lining. And it was really just to test to see if I wanted to do something like this. Would I really enjoy it? Or would a blog turn into work just like something else? Because I wanted to create something that would be filled with joy and excitement and something that I was creating. And then I had the idea one day in my room in Wisconsin for overcoming graduation. I had this idea to create something that would help young adults to avoid some of the struggles I faced, to be better prepared, to understand what life was bringing their way. And so through all of this, I started the podcast where I was interviewing people and telling the stories of people who had overcome graduation in unique ways to help show young adults that you can do anything if you set your mind to it and you're willing to put in the work. So often we hear about mindset, we hear about doing one thing one way, people are looking for shortcuts. There's nothing that can compensate for the hard work and the attention that you put into making things happen. So I kept working on the book. There were times where the only thing I could do in a given day was get out of bed. And I didn't have energy to write. I didn't have energy for the podcast. I didn't have energy for anything. And it really took some time. It took some work. And I hired my first coach who helped me pick myself back up. And down that road, my life turned around. I got my fitness back. I lost all the weight I had put on after losing my mom. But one thing I'll say is if there's anybody going through that now, don't feel shame and don't beat yourself up, because when you're going through something that heavy, there are times where you just need to focus on you. You need to focus on rest. You need to focus on recovery. And there were days where I said, I'm going to just do whatever I need to feel good within reason. Yeah. So I said, if I want to have 2 beers tonight, I'm going to have 2 beers. If I want to have unhealthy food, I'm going to have unhealthy food, because I was so far lost that whatever I could do to make me feel good in the moment, even if that meant staying on the couch all day, which is so contrary to my nature, if that meant that's what I needed, then that's okay. So for anybody going through that, give yourself permission to hurt. Give yourself permission to feel. I think one of the most dangerous things we can do as human beings, especially as men, is repress and push away our emotions. My understanding of masculinity and being a man has changed so dramatically in the past 2 years. And for me, a truly masculine man, or even a masculine woman, a masculine person is able to express and convey and let their emotions go and release them so that they can get back to doing what they want. And they don't let those emotions stop them from living their life. Because for me, there were times it was so crippling that I didn't feel like I was ever going to come out of it. But over time, with help of friends, reaching out and asking for help, I can't emphasize that enough, because especially type A people like us get all caught up in trying to do everything ourselves. This is a human experience. We're meant to share this. There are people that want to help. They just need to know that you need it. So reach out. Like, I got therapy. I did a variety of different things that I never thought I would need to do. Because when I was younger, I was like, oh, I have exercise and good diet and that's all I'll ever need. But something I came to understand was that at that point in my life, prior to my mom getting sick, I had this spectrum of happiness and sadness. And I thought those were the extremes. This is the happiest I can ever be, and this is the saddest I can ever be. And when my mom told me that diagnosis, the bottom of that just shot out. And I realized that the saddest I'd ever been was redefined, but that also means that the happiest I've ever been can be redefined as well. That I only knew a certain level of happiness. And if I'm willing to work and live differently, that I can create much greater happiness than I've ever known before.
You'd mentioned that you know, before the show, that you struggled with writing, editing, and, but I'm really kind of curious as to how you actually became a bestseller on Amazon.
So in terms of getting your book to be a bestseller, now, why is that important and why do people want it?
Yes, I'm really curious about this.
So the thing is, it is used as a credibility indicator in most cases. So getting a best-selling book on Amazon does not equate to millions of dollars. Right. And here's a common misconception is people hear best-selling author and they assume that my book sold 100,000 copies in the first day. Mm-hmm. Because a New York Times bestseller is a very different thing. In this internet age, let me just break down some of the secrets or the behind the scenes stuff that's going on. So Amazon is using algorithms constantly to determine the popularity of a product for everything across their spectrum. Mm-hmm. So when you publish a book, it's looking at the categories that it's ranked in to see how many are selling in a given period of time in that category relative to all the other books. So if you're in a very, let's say, low competition category and there's only 50 books, if you sell two in a day and none of the other books sold one, you're at number one in that category. So here's the interesting thing. So I'm fully transparent with this because I'm not shy about it. I don't try to give a false impression or anything. I'm very proud of what I've done. But on the first day, I believe my book sold between 60 and 70 copies. And that got it to number one in the physical impairments category. So I'm going to give you guys two little hacks because I'm not going to give it all away. But if you do these two things and you have a quality book, that's one thing. Don't write a book to get a bestseller. Don't write a book so you can have a credibility indicator. Write a book when you have a story that's worth telling. Too many people in entrepreneurship now are writing a book because they know that you need to have a book. Don't do it for that. If it doesn't have the heart, it's just another worthless book that's out there that somebody wrote to get accolades. And if you know how to promote it, you could get a bestseller, but that's not worth it, man. Do it because you love it. And if you're going to invest that time and energy, put it into something you really care about. So, first strategy. And this is really high level stuff. So for anybody who's writing a book, this is very powerful. First step is your category selection. When you're publishing a book on Amazon and Kindle, you get to pick two categories. So you have to be very strategic. If you pick lower competition categories, when you go into Amazon and go to books, you can actually see how many books are in each category. Then you can see, all right, this is relevant to my book. That's also key. Make sure it's relevant. Don't put it in like vampire fan fiction if it's a book about exercising. And then make sure, like, check how much competition exists within that category. What my strategy was, you can do it if you want to become a bestseller in two categories, you can put two low competition. What I wanted to do was use the lower competition category to leverage me into a higher competition one. So I used the category of physical impairments and disabilities, writing about my team triumph, as the low competition category, and then self-help and personal development as the high competition. So here's what happens. If your book becomes a bestseller in one category, the algorithms detect it as being more popular and will boost it in the ratings in the other category. Mm-hmm. So that's why you need to be so strategic about what you pick, because they don't let you pick 15 categories because you could really take advantage of the system that way. And because mine became number one bestseller in the physical impairments category, then it broke the top 100 and got up to 88 in self-help and personal development, which I think has well over 100,000 books. That's one strategy you can use that can greatly, greatly increase your influence. Now, again, back to the why, when you can say best-selling author, this is something that's going to help you in order to get more interviews, to be able to be on stages, and to share your message more fully. And I remember asking my coach, I'm like, well, isn't it like cheating? Isn't it inauthentic? Isn't it this or this or this? And he said, Brian, do you believe that your book can help people? I was like, absolutely. I know it can. And he said, wouldn't it be in your best interest and in the best interest of everyone that your book can reach for you to do everything you can to reach as many people as possible? And I was like, you know, he's right there. So for me, I believe the intention is so critical and why you're doing it is so critical. But one other piece, and guys, honestly, these two pieces are game changers. And I had to invest a lot of money to learn them, but I believe the education piece is so critical. But do a pre-order for your book. Prep it, set up a timeline, and you can do pre-orders on Kindle. And here's the trick. All of your pre-orders get counted on your launch day. Yeah. So when you're in those low competition categories, all of a sudden, if you had 200 pre-orders on day one, in a moment, you have 200 book purchases. So the algorithms are just going to jack your book up. And now you can reach so many more people. So from the book writing standpoint, if anybody has questions about that, finding their message and their story, absolutely reach out. I love to help people with this. But if you apply those to, there's a lot more things you can do to really effectively do a launch and more effectively market your book, but we don't have time to dive into everything.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is so helpful. This is great. Cool. I never saw it that way, but it makes sense.
And that's the thing. It's like so many, like we talked about in pre-show, when you know the game and you know how it works, you can play the game the most effectively.
Right.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes,
absolutely. Awesome. So, you know, after the book, you officially went into Overcoming Graduation. You've been on several podcasts, continue to travel the world. You got your coach and this material as well. Tell me a little bit about, you know, the clients that you like to help, and you know, are they generally other quarter life crisis people, and how did you find your first paying client? Because a lot of these folks are straight out of college and they're like, you know, it's like, they can't even fathom paying for that kind of service, you know, because up until that point, they've honestly been told by society, this is what you have to do. So if you elaborate on that, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an interesting thing that we're taught our whole lives to invest in houses and cars and in our education, but we're never told to invest in ourselves. We're never told to invest in our development and our mental, physical, and emotional state. And the one place we'll see it commonly is physical training. People say, oh, I'll get a trainer, but any trainer will tell you that the biggest hangups that their clients have are not physical, they're mental. They're mindset-based, they're limiting beliefs, there's all of these things that come up for people. So to get my first client actually was one of my best friends because I had been helping, coaching, I had started my business, he wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so I finally said, I need to make this real because this is something I really want to do. I want to be a speaker, a coach, a writer. I want to travel the world and help people. And the only way that's going to start is if I start, because there's a lot of fear when you start as a coach that you're not good enough. Again, imposter syndrome pops up that who are you to coach? Who are you to help? But when I saw the years and hours and hours and hours I'd invested in this and saw that in basic conversations, in a few minutes, I could help people get a different mindset and perspective on some of their biggest hangups or see things in a new light, I realized this is something I had an aptitude for. And my friend said, listen, man, you're helping me so much. He goes, I want you to be my coach. So I put together an offering. I got my first client. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, even before that, a friend recommended a young girl to me. And I said young, she was just slightly younger than me. And I decided to do my first client for free because I said, I want to prove to myself that I can do this and give value. I gave my first several clients 100% money back guarantee. I said, if you do not get value from this, I will give you every penny back, because that's the faith and the confidence I need to have in this. But I needed to prove to myself as much to them that I could do this and really give transformational experiences in very short time frames. And so, like anything else, if you want to develop confidence, if it's going up and approaching girls, if it's any type of skill, needs repeated practice to be honed. So one, I had to invest in my own coaches because it's practice what you preach. If I'm telling someone coaching is valuable and I'm not investing in my own coaches, again, that integrity is so critical. And two, it's relentlessly working to improve myself, to be honest and authentic and to be real with people. Because I never would say anything like I'm a guru. I would never say I'm a master. I tell people up front, if you want a perfect guru coach, I'm not the person for you. But if you want someone that works hard at this, who has worked very hard and is going to do everything he can to help you, then we're going to have a successful relationship. So that's how the first client came through. And since then, I've helped people publish books. I've helped people overcome some of their biggest limiting beliefs, get in better shape, have better relationships. And seeing the testimonials and getting the text from people saying that, you know, me getting over all my fear and my doubts has helped them to change their life. That's some of the most impactful and important things for me in doing what I do.
Right. Awesome. Awesome.
Right. Good point.
So what are you looking forward to in the rest of 2017? I mean, we're already a quarter in.
I can't believe it.
I know.
It's day 87.
That's pretty unbelievable. Yeah, so for the rest of the year, I actually just hired my next coach just 2 days ago. And I'm going to be diving into my health and fitness in a way that I never have before. My new coach is a guy who normally works with 7- and 8-figure entrepreneurs and is one of the highest level fitness coaches out there right now. Really incredible guy. And I am not a 7- or 8-figure entrepreneur, but through the relationship we've developed, I was like, I'm ready to do this. And guys, I will say oftentimes coaching is uncomfortable. To your point earlier, JC, it's like, who invests in this? Who does this? How do you pick a coach? If anyone ever pressures you and you feel uncomfortable, do not go for it. Get tons of references. Find people who have been through their program and contact them, get resources, because there's a lot of nonsense. There are a lot of people who are just regurgitating motivational phrases at you and saying, just believe and you just have to change and be intuitive. And there's a ton of nonsense in the personal development world. Really trust your gut, but get references, get resources, do the due diligence, because if you invest in the right coach, there are so many good ones out there. It drives me nuts that you get the people who are just like doing it with half effort to try and make money because they see the opportunity versus the people who are really driven to make a difference. And so if you're interested in coaching, I know tons of coaches, and the other thing is find the right coach for the right thing at that point in your life, because at different points, you're going to need different things. And at one point, my first coach helped me to pick myself up after my mom died and helped me get my fitness under control and helped me start my business. And then thanks to the work we did, I ended up launching my book while living in Brazil, two life dreams coming true simultaneously. My second coach helped me a lot with masculinity, with strength, and pushing past my limiting beliefs, my doubts, and going way further than I ever thought I could. My next coach is an expert in helping you optimize your fitness, diet, and routines in a way that you will be almost superhuman compared to how you've ever felt before. Because if we don't take care of ourselves, we cannot do the things we want to do. And I hear the analogy all the time of, you know, pouring cheap gas into a Ferrari. I have let diet and lots of other excuses hold me back, and I'm tired of living in my own excuses. So this is my next big step in pushing past all of my other doubts and limiting beliefs. So what I'm excited about this year, I just launched my first information product. And Layla, like we were talking about, language is so critical. And when I was living in Wisconsin, I was told it would take another 10 years to learn a language. I had learned Spanish in school. People told me it was impossible. They said you needed to be immersed. And I said, you know what? I started to realize that we define our reality. And I said, I don't accept that. Sean Stevenson, who I mentioned earlier, says, never believe a prediction that doesn't empower you. And so I said, I'm not going to believe that. And I started looking up different ways to learn a language, how to retain more information, how to create hooks and link things together that you never would before. And in 7 months, I went from speaking no Portuguese at all to having 2-hour conversations entirely in Portuguese. And that was while living in Wisconsin. So anybody who knows Wisconsin knows it's not the most diverse place that you'll ever meet. I wasn't running around saying, oi, tudo bem, like with all my friends there. I did have one Brazilian friend. But so I wanted to prove all those excuses wrong for myself. And now I want to help others do that. So the program, I condensed the lessons down, and in 90 days, will help people learn any Latin-based language. That's Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, or French. And I took a pilot group through this. I took them through the first month of the program. We saw great progress and great results. The feedback was really exciting. And I'm really pumped to get this out. So some of my biggest focuses this year from a personal perspective is getting my health, sleep, morning routine, because I am my whole life I've been not a morning person, and I want to get past that excuse or that story. I'm excited to grow my fan base and my listenership for the podcast, as well as get the language product out more and really promote my book more, because 10% of every copy I sell goes to my team Triumph. So my goal is to raise enough to buy one of the specialty custom running chairs, which are between $2,000 and $4,000. At this point, I've raised about $400, and so I've got a ways to go, but that's a mission of mine, is through my book sales to make it possible for one more person to be a part of that.
Awesome.
And one of my greatest goals and one of the things that brings me the most joy and I feel the most impact is speaking. I got to give my first speeches as Overcoming Graduation back at Penn State in December of last year. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever experienced. And I was in the zone. I've invested so much in speaking and learning to share a message. And it was one of the greatest things. So that's something I'm really going to be dedicating a lot of focus to, is booking more and more speaking events.
Good
and
deal.
As always, investing in myself. So
right.
lots
Good
of
job.
Exciting things coming.
That's awesome. Well, I really am impressed. This is awesome.
Thank you.
I'm really impressed. This is great. I mean, I'm really glad that you understand the importance of sleep and time management and kind of before things get further serious and hectic, you're taking a step to say, hey, I'm going to be doing these things, but in the meantime, I'm going to have to take care of my health because when I hit that point, I'm going to get stuck.
Yep. Busting out the rapid fire questions here because I know we're kind of approaching the end of the hour and people got to move on with their days. But three favorite top books.
Top books. Oh, okay. All right. And I'll focus this on young adults. The Education of Millionaires, especially if you're artistic and you don't believe that what you do can make you money and bring you fulfillment, amazing, amazing book. I recommend The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. If you want to understand why and how we form habits and why we do what we do, that's one of the most incredible, like, educational books. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorite books of all time is The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. And if you're a person who feels you've got a greater mission in life, check out that book because one of my favorite quotes is I've learned far more from fiction than I ever learned from nonfiction. So you can get just as much, if not more, education from story books than you can from, you know, quote unquote, personal development
books. And since you brought him up, and I actually mentioned this in our conversation with Barbara Ireland, that he was recently on CBS Sunday Morning. So since you like him as an author, go look that up on YouTube. Just type it in.
Absolutely.
It's a good little piece there. And I'll mm-hmm. probably link that again in the show notes. But next one, what is one gift that you like giving others?
Recently, it's been books. Recently, with all of the growth that I've been doing, especially and recently, it's been areas of masculinity. It's understanding what it means to be a man. I've been sharing those books with friends a lot and seeing how people can suddenly, just from reading one book, redefine the way they view themselves in the world and have a lot more fun and express themselves so much more fully. So lately, the gifts I've been enjoying giving have been books, which I've never done before.
Good deal. Good deal.
That's great.
And then the next one is, if every entrepreneur was given a guide to being a creative handbook on their first day, filled with, you know, brutal honesty and accompanied with illustrations, what would be something you'd find in it?
Don't let your emotional state define your ability to create, because many people think they need to be in this positive, upbeat, ready to kill it all the time mindset in order to create great things. Some of your greatest creations as an artist, and I see us all as artists in some way,
right.
everything that we do and we bring into the world is art.
Exactly.
Your creations in your negative and your dark times will be just as, if not more powerful than your creations in those times when you're in the zone. And one of the biggest myths is that you can be in the zone all the time. I don't think we're ever meant to do that because life is meant to have the ups and downs. So for all the artists and for all the creative people, recognize that there's going to be times you don't feel like it. But the way you get past that is understanding the value that your art has and making sure that you know that people can benefit from what you have to bring to the world.
So, Brian, what is one thing you believe all high school students must know?
Yeah, there's so many. I'll pick one that I think is really critical. And this is for all people. But especially for young adults, and that's my target, but nothing in life is permanent. We get this idea that if I pick the wrong major, if I pick the wrong career path, if I pick the wrong person to date, that everything's over. And if it doesn't work out, then I can never be happy. The reality is that everything we do is a choice. So if we choose to stay in that reality, that's a choice. But there are so few things in this world that are permanent and that are black and white. So when you make that decision, if you pick the wrong career, change. If it's not bringing you joy, if you're in the wrong relationship, or if the relationship isn't strong, work on it. Work to grow together. And if you or that person aren't willing to grow together, it's not the right relationship. When it comes to school or your major, it has so little to do with what you do in the world, and it has nothing to do with what the success you're able to achieve. If you're willing to get past the standard definitions in society of what makes you successful or not, and understand what real success looks like for you. And when you let go of everyone else's definition, guys, it's tough. And I fluctuate between times where I don't give a damn what people say, and other times where I'm so insecure and my ego is speaking so loud. But when you let go of that need to live in somebody else's reality, and you let go of the idea that any bad decision you make is permanent, you can recreate yourself in any moment on any day.
Wow. Nice.
Nice. Well said. So, Brian, what does it mean to live a life of abundance?
A life of abundance. This is timely because abundance is all about how you view the world, and abundance is not having more things or more money. It's everyone I know that I respect, all of my mentors that are very real people. They say it comes down to gratitude. It comes down to celebrating the things that we have. And in the first 2 months of this year, I was in such a negative way. I was just focusing on all the things. And Sean Stevenson, again, it keeps coming up, but he says, people are unhappy, depressed, scared when they focus on what they don't have, don't want, and don't like. So to get into that mode of abundance, focus on what you have, what you want, and what you like. So much of the quality of our lives comes from the questions we ask and the way that we view the world. So something I said to both Layla and JC, well, I said to both you guys, is that I greatly believe that the quality of our life comes down to the quality of the questions we ask. And oftentimes we're just asking ourselves terrible questions. Why do I suck? Why is nobody attracted to me? Why am I fat? Why don't I look good? Guys, we can reshape those questions at any moment. That's a decision. Those are habits just like anything else. So if you choose to start saying, what do I have to be grateful for in this moment? What wonderful thing has happened to me recently? When was the last time I just laughed so hard my stomach hurt? Because unfortunately for many people, that's going to be a long time ago. And then, all right, it's been a while. So what can I do to have another one of those moments? What can I do to connect with friends? What can I do to be more authentic and express more fully? Because guys, life becomes such a beautiful celebration when you let go of other people's judgments and focus on living the way you want to and bringing the best impact you can. When I get focused on just sharing and giving and not letting the negative voices in my head get to me, life is so fun. It's so exciting. And amazing things just seem to happen by magic, it seems. And when I'm not in that state, it's a totally different experience. So recognize that abundance comes from choosing to recognize and celebrate what you have and then continue to work to bring value to others. And that abundance will just grow.
Awesome.
Well said.
Real quick, if people are wanting to start their new life today, what are 4 steps that they can start taking?
One of my favorite quotes from Russell Brand is, you can't think your way into acting differently, but you can act your way into thinking differently. So one step, move. Get up and move. I don't care if you haven't worked out ever or if you're the best person in the gym, you need to get active and get moving. Start to change the habits that are around you. So one, move. 2, recognize that you are the decider and take full responsibility. It's what Jocko Willink says, calls extreme ownership. When you let go of excuses and the ability to blame anyone else, it can be scary because you have nobody to point the finger at, but you also take back this great amount of power to say, it is my choice where my life goes and I'm going to make these things happen. And 2 other pieces, I would say, get started and get connected with either a friend or a coach or a person who has achieved the results that you want and start to build a relationship with them to learn how they did it. And then 4th piece, invest in yourself. It doesn't always have to be money, guys. It can be time, energy, and attention. Start putting your energy and attention towards the things that you want to learn, to the experiences you want to have, and you'll be amazed at how quickly you'll be able to start creating a totally new reality.
where can people find you if they need help with any of that?
Would love to have you guys come and reach out to me at brian@overcominggraduation.com. I love when people connect and let me know things that they found valuable, questions they have. If you want to learn more about overcoming graduation in general, you can check out the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also visit overcominggraduation.com. And if you're curious about learning a new language in 90 days or less, visit overcominggraduation.com/language. And final thing would be if you want to purchase a copy of the book and benefit my team Triumph, as well as get 3 free book bonuses, you can visit thefirststepgift.com.
All right, man. Well, total pleasure in having you on, and thank you.
Thanks a lot, Brian, for coming on the show.
Yeah, this was fantastic. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, gang, there you have it. Big thanks to Brian for joining Layla and myself in this one. He's a pretty interesting guy, and you know, I'm glad to see he's doing all the awesome work that he's up to. And as I was doing the post work for this show, I sent him a few messages on Facebook and found out that he was in Hong Kong having breakfast overlooking the Kowloon Bay. So he's definitely always on the go. You can take this conversation to the next level by visiting the show notes at newinceptions.com/86. Show note extras for this session include some things that Brian mentioned in our chat today. And the first one is his first big speech at Penn State after founding Overcoming Graduation. And as you heard, his mom played a vital role in him becoming who he is today. And, you know, I can definitely relate, as I was talking about in the show. And during her time battling cancer, he made a video montage of family and friends supporting her through the song by Pharrell Williams called Happy. And so it's so cool that he was able to do that while, you know, she was still around. So good job, man. Next up, he mentions Sean Stevenson's dance party video. I have that posted as well as his TED Talk. And finally, as a bonus, I wanted you guys to learn about Team Hoyt if you didn't know who Dick and Rick were. Brian's book, The First Step, has these two on the cover. And when you buy the book, 10% is donated to My Team Triumph, an organization which helps individuals with disabilities participate in endurance events. So that's it for today's session. Thanks again for joining us. As you know, we love hearing from you guys. You can leave feedback on the show by leaving a review on iTunes by going to newinceptions.com/AOL iTunes. And whenever I get those, I'll be sure to read them on here as I have done in the past. Also, if you want to connect with any of us directly regarding any feedback or questions you have, you can drop us an email via heyguys@newinceptions.com. And if you want to connect with Brian directly or any of our past guests, other listeners, or members of the team, you can do that by going to the AOL networking group on Facebook. Find it by going to newinceptions.com/AOL networking. In next week's episode, Clay and I chat with a fellow podcaster by the name of Anthony Hayes. And Anthony is the other half of the founding pair at the Podcast Discovery Center. So if you're into podcasts, he's a good guy to know. You should also know that Anthony is the purest of the two. So if you see podcasting as more of a way of just getting your message out, then he's your guy. He's also a speaker, an author of the book Science of Being, The Ultimate Survivor Story. And we'll also be talking about his M5 strategy that he implements daily to make his life more purpose-driven and positive. So that one comes out next week. Be sure to like the New Inceptions page to get informed when it's released. And yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for session 86. Thank you for joining Brian, Layla, and myself. And until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.